streamed on the... No, I don't know if it'll be streamed or not, but the suspicion is it will. This is a session that we put together largely because I think it follows the trend that certainly students are using these tools, whether we have programmatically worked through or thought about them from an academic perspective or not. But I think there's also a tremendous amount of creativity going on in the academic community to try to leverage these tools for scholarly work in some fashion, or for simply the social glue that that these kinds of collaboration tools can bring both to a topic and to our students' lives as they work through their college years. What we have is a relatively ad hoc, since it is Wednesday morning of the last day of the last session, a relatively ad hoc set of tools and ideas about their use that we thought would be worth presenting or describing. But as much solicit from you ideas or discussions or topics around collaboration tools that you think you would like to hear more about, because I'm pleased to be joined this morning with two of the leaders in the field, frankly, around the use of collaboration tools. And if you have been on the net, you have seen their names. And if you've been on looking at blog posts, you have seen their references. So let me first do introductions and start with the person immediately to my right, Alan Levine, who is at Maricopa Community College District. And Alan has been one of the more prolific technologists around that I have run into in recent years. I thought he was the leader of a large distributed development shop, and I'm looking at Ron over here, who's shaking his head because the development shop is named Alan Levine. To his right is Stephen Downs, who spoke to us earlier. Stephen has got perhaps one of the best perspectives in, or at least a blog site, his website, which is valuable in my view as much because of the voice he brings to the commentary about the links, whether you agree or disagree with him. It's nice, it's refreshing, it's stimulating to have someone with a real perspective and point of view who is outright and says it. And that is greatly appreciated in this kind of a space. So what I thought we would do is, first of all, open up to the audience to get things going, just what it is you would like or what you thought of in terms of this session that you would like to make sure that we talk about in terms of collaboration tools for teaching. I mean, it's pretty clear that we have some ideas in mind, and I believe we have some people waiting in the wings.
I hope so. Tim is probably not available.
Tim is not available?
Yeah.
Okay. So does that mean we don't have anybody at the other end?
We'll have to wing it. We're trying to get in touch with Nick Noakes.
I see. We're trying to get... What's that?
We'll find people.
Yeah.
I wanted to do a video chat with... there's a guy named Tim Lauer who's an elementary school principal in Portland, Oregon, and he blogs. And his school uses weblogs, wikis, and the kids are using these tools. So my thought was to have him describe just some of the things that they're doing. He's not available, but I do have some links for you. But we're talking about the net generation, like students coming in now. The generation he's doing will blow the doors off of what we're worrying about now in terms of, you know, kids in elementary school who are using wikis for collaboration tool.
Right. So before we get started, from the audience, from the floor, are there particular things you want to make sure we talk about before we get going?
Sure. Well, I'd like the question settled as to whether we should say wiki or wiki.
Ah! So we have the definitive pronunciation question as to what to call this thing. Stefan?
I call it wiki.
Wiki. There it is. Say no more.
Wiki or wiki? Is that the...
That was the question.
That's pretty subtle.
Wiki.
Yeah.
It is definitively wiki.
That's good for it.
Anything else profound and insightful?
I'd like to hear more about wikis and what is actually being accomplished with wikis.
Okay, so that's going to be a theme here, and we planned for that, so that's good. Back?
Howard,
how are these things being evaluated? Or are they? Right?
That's a good one.
We'd like to hear some of the ways that people are implementing laws in a multi-user environment, and also how to kind of make wikis and blogs and other tools like this available in an easy way to faculty so that it's not an overwhelming mass of stuff.
Yeah, it's like the second
one. Blogs in a multi-user environment. Okay.
Right, but the second phase was how do you implement these things without either arithmetic or a logarithmic workload increase in order to support them. Yes?
As a central computing guy, I'd like to know if these things just sort of naturally happen dynamically and we should just watch and encourage, or whether there is need for some sort of central infrastructure to make it easier for people who wouldn't be there in the first round.
That's a good one.
Yeah. All right.
Have to think about that one.
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes.
Yeah. Well, this is on teaching. It'd be nice if you would wildly speculate on the value of the research.
Okay. The value of the research value of these collaboration tools. In fact.
I wonder what's next.
So do we. You're going to tell us, right?
Research value, what's next?
That'll be a fun one.
The Zikis, I think.
We'll get to that later.
Anybody else want to toss out? Yes.
I'm with EduClause, and as another learning environment, I've been interested in some speculations and recommendations about how some of these tools could be propagated to a community of practice, which, depending on how you count, it could be as many as 15,000 active people with a number of niche interests. We have a more or less antique technology in our constituent groups, some 30-odd specialized interest areas that communicate via listservs. Some of them are very robust and working well, so I'm interested in not having new technology to replace them, but work with them.
Terrific. Okay.
And collaboration tools with mobile computing.
Collaboration tools that encompass support for mobile devices.
They could put a telephone in a mobile device.
What an idea.
That'd be a great idea.
What would you do with it?
I'd like to know if any of the wikis are yet viable enough to replace a content management system.
Ah.
Wikis. Define viable.
Reasonable versus the hundreds of thousands of dollars for commercial CMS, but yet you can still present a professional website.
Right.
Sure.
Well, and before we're done here, I would like to know what some of you are actually using in this space. Tossing out the tool and or an adjective describing your experience with it. So that's my question for you guys. Anybody else want to toss out before we... Yes, Ron.
If you can build Wikipedias, can you build a course and the same fashion?
That's being done.
Mm-hmm. Can you build courses from the Wikipedia idea? Any answers? Yes. Okay. With that in mind, I think there is a general sense...
All those down in the...
there's another sort of tool out there, Cyprian Lomas and I have been using this during this conference. This is a group editing tool called SubEthaEdit. So he's actually taking notes, as well as Nick Noakes is attached to this, who's in Hong Kong right now. So
this is live.
This is live, so this is a way for people... I've seen it used mostly during conferences. Instead of individuals trying to keep a good note collection, they sort of group write it. And Cyprian and I were trying to do it during some of the presentations, and we were kind of stomping on each other as we wrote, so there's some sort of dynamic that needs to be worked out. But I've also heard of people who are programmers who are using this to develop code and actually doing it from remote locations, because they're basically writing in the same document space.
So, Alan, how is Cyprian's screen getting up there? You're sharing... It's just through the collaborative nature, right?
It's through... I don't even know how the technology works.
Well, I see him typing, and it's coming up there.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a cord, and so it must
be... Right, so he's wirelessly connected to the document there that is the one that's physically connected to the projector.
It's a way to project a remote.
Right. I've actually used
projecting his own, so you're editing as well.
We're all editing the same document.
I mean, it's an interesting way to
Right. Now, I've written journal articles using this with people across the country. Sub-ETHA edit.
It's the weirdest name for a program.
I know.
Does it work on something other than a Mac? Is that the question?
I
have no.
Are there other computers that don't really matter for us?
No. I don't think sub-ETHA editor. I've heard of other applications that do similar things. Some of them are a little bit clunkier because they work through a server. This is not a server-based application. Yeah, it's all peer-to-peer. And it's pretty responsive.
Okay. But that's something we should look at quickly. Well, one of you in the audience can blog, can Google that real quickly and see if there's a link to something that's a Windows equivalent to sub-ETHA edit.
I was just a little curious. I mean, when we say collaboration tools, what is, exactly does that mean?
Not a bad question.
So I'm actually, I put some of my stuff here in a one of many wikis out there. So
well, why don't we take the start with Alan? Why don't you talk a little bit? There's clearly an interest and a theme in the use of wikis,
right?
Whether both from the perspective of how one goes about. You know, technically installing and delivering a tool like this to large numbers, but also what's the educational value? Is there anything associated with this assessment? And can you build something larger than just a single in collaboration instance around it, like a group project, a course, et cetera?
Yeah.
So we start with you and and Stephen jointly chime in as appropriate.
Okay. Wikis are probably the strangest kind of tool out there. And the first time I read that it was a website where anybody could anonymously come in and edit and create new content, I said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. Why would I allow anybody to do that? And it really wasn't until I had a collaborative wiki experience, and it was in developing a shared online resource with some collaborators up in Canada, that it really made sense for sort of doing that sort of tool. So a lot of times people are asking, what's the difference between a blog and a wiki, or what's the difference between a blog and a discussion board? They're not really interchangeable tools. So in my mind, wikis work, you know, great for doing sort of group writing, for collaborating. I think they're ideal for a lot of times we're trying to build these like resource lists to provide to people in our institutions, and we go through iterations of making static web pages or making database-driven things, but a wiki is sort of where we can sort of pull the input from multiple people and ask them to contribute. And there's wikis are really old technology, like since the mid-90s.
They've been around a long time.
And really kind of a techie, geeky thing. And when you start looking at wiki software, there's a couple hundred of them out there.
Yeah.
And I think it's like every programmer's sort of hobby to sort of roll out their own wiki code. There was even a contest, I think, to write the wiki program in the shortest lines of code. I think someone did it in like four lines of Perl, which is probably unreadable.
The lines are like...
Yeah. And no one can read Perl. Can anybody read Perl? Stephen can.
I love Perl.
So there's a lot of them out there, and until probably a year or two ago, they're really kind of, still kind of techie geeky.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them were really ugly. They were just basically plain text. Yeah, and JotSpot. So since wikis have been becoming more popular, there are a couple newer ones that are coming out that are less geeky to use and a little bit more geared towards your simple user. So just as an example, I've been trying to find ones that are externally hosted, because when I hear faculty want to try wiki, sure, I could set one up, but it's sure easy enough to send them somewhere else so they can have a wiki experience. And some of these free externally hosted ones are nice, because if they really want to try or experiment with their students, they can do it, they can experiment. It's not on your infrastructure if you're worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them that experience, and then if they're able to evolve something useful out of it, that's great. So this one is called Wiki Spaces, and actually I have a... I just threw up some of my notes last night into this place. So basically you create an account and you get to create your own name on it. That's where this stuff is at. One of my favorite ones is out there. Does everybody have that written down? It's called PB Wiki, which is Peanut Butter Wiki. And the idea is creating a wiki as easy as creating a peanut butter sandwich. And that one I like is, what I like is that you can put a password protection on it. So if you want to do something for your students in a course, and you don't want it to be a wide open wiki, you can create it in PBWiki. And I sent it around to some of the people in Maricopa, and one of our teachers at South Mountain Community College, Elisa Cooper, she's one of these young faculty members who you just mention a technology, and she goes out and uses it and just does wild things with it. So she's teaching a low-level basic writing course, and she's been doing blogs and wikis with her students for 2 or 3 years. And this is something she set out to use for this semester, but she's basically wanting to set up a wiki page for every one of her students to post some of their writing assignments and do some peer writing in this PBWiki environment. So there's not a whole lot here because she's just getting started with this. But one of the nicer things about these newer tools, I'm using this Wiki Spaces one. The key to most wikis are there's usually a link that says edit this page. This one is kind of nice because instead of inserting wiki code, which is sort of like an abbreviated HTML, this one has a little bit of a WYSIWYG formatting, so you can just type, and if you want to make bullet lists, that sort of thing. A little bit easier to use. So those tools are improving. Yeah.
Just as you go on, both of you go on through this entire session, if you can talk about when this is Mac specific, when this is platform agnostic.
This has nothing to do with platform. This is all internet based.
Okay.
So,
all thin client.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever can see a URL can participate in this.
Okay.
I wanted to follow up on your point. One of the real distinguishing characteristics of wikis, because of its geek history, is the syntax associated with how you make your edits. The more recent versions have started to do these, quasi-WYSIWYG kind of try to bring in some sort of rich text icons for editing documents or editing text in the space. Whereas earlier ones, as you said, have various sorts of tags like you see here.
Wiki markup.
And the variation in both the richness of the tags and their idiosyncrasies are huge.
And plus, from one wiki software to another, there's a slight difference in how you create a link how you mark up your content.
So the geek folks will probably look at that and feel real comfortable, right? And if you have a community that is in that space, that this is probably an attractive thing. Others will look at it and say, my God, what am I supposed to do with this?
And then, of course, the prime example, everybody knows about Wikipedia, right? The thing about wikis are sometimes in a small wiki, you're kind of subject to the bad people on the internet who want to come in and insert links to sites you don't want on your wiki. So there's some amount of wiki spam. So if your wiki is kind of not well known, you could be okay. But sometimes, because I posted some of the wikis I was trying to use with projects at Maricopa online, and I started getting hit by people who are trying to improve their Google rank by inserting content on wikis. And that's something that immediately it did turn off the faculty I was trying to work with. That's the dark side of the wiki.
So let's turn that comment into the question about the need for infrastructure. For one thing, I saw a list of student names, which may not be good to have in the open.
Yeah.
And also I expect the instructor had to manually put the student names in.
Yes, she
correct.
Did. Yes. Yeah.
And then you just said that people can insert things you don't want. So what do these things tell us about what we might want to offer at our institutions?
Well, a couple of comments with that. One is it tells you that if, as we probably are all increasingly concerned about the dissemination of personal information, then for those wiki tools which are by definition and by structure essentially open, you may want to put them in an infrastructure context behind something, right? So that at least it's not hit from the outside world and it's within your community, whatever that definition is. More recently, probably the evolution in this space has been around security and ACL management for the spaces. The one that I use the most is Confluence, which comes out of, it's either Australia or
Australia.
Is it Australia?
Yeah.
Right. For those of you that deal with Sakai, that's the one that they use for their discussion groups. Which it is useful from our perspective at MIT. It was the first one we came across, which allowed us to actually lock down granularly pages within a wiki. So you could actually create ACL groups for particular subpages within the within a given wiki space. And we were relatively easily able to integrate it into our single sign-on, our certificate environment, and have it take names from group lists from we have for courses anyway, import it, and actually create the spaces for us. So from an infrastructure perspective and a central IT management perspective, it was very, very useful. And most of the other ones that we've run across would give you an opportunity to lock down a space, or but that's it.
And the software's evolving to give you more granular control over the rights to access. So the first evolution wikis were the whole thing is closed or it's open. But now it's getting a little bit more control.
The attraction of a wiki option for a faculty member might have a support in an organization that could create course-based web pages within a CMS environment.
Question.
Why would anybody want to use it?
If they have a secure environment around them.
Well, the real powerful is where you want that space for people to be able to collaboratively edit the same content and create new content easily. And one of the powers of wikis is that it's really quick to create things. So I've done about my last five or six presentations in a wiki format because you can create them almost on the fly and as needed. And then there was the question about people using this in a course context. There was that class at what's it called, Bemidji State University in Minnesota.
Right.
They've been doing a blogs and wikis course for about 2 years. That is in a wiki format. Well done.
Building on that idea, is anybody using a wiki developing course content where students participate in developing the content?
Anybody in the room?
We have an English professor at Houston Community College who has been teaching students for about a year and a half. And she does develop her content and assign content modules to students to develop that with which and that's been pretty successful.
On opencourse.org, there's a young lady from Cal State Monterey Bay, who has been teaching a number of courses where the students create content very successfully. In particular, she had one course which was joint with Southern Illinois University, a class there and a class at Monterey Bay, on the ideas of Doug Engelbart. And the students created all the content in the wiki. And in fact, her students were instructional technology students, and the students in Southern Illinois were philosophy students, and each student did their own take on one of Engelbart's ideas. One of the Monterey Bay students created a flash-based version of one of Engelbart's ideas. I can't remember which one. And his other professors complained that he was spending all of his time working on this project.
No place. People using the Wikipedia engine to create other kinds of content. I don't know if anybody's seen Wiki Travel, which are travel guides where people who travel to anywhere in the world write their own version of photos, and it's one of these things that are growing more comprehensive than the one you can buy in the bookstore.
That's actually pretty useful.
Yeah, that was very useful. Wikibooks is sort of this content of people trying to write open source content, textbooks, right, if you will, in the wiki thing. And the Wikiversity, which was sort of the idea of creating course content in sort of the same environment.
From the FOSS community?
Yeah, well, this is all out of the wiki,
right,
organization.
Someone mentioned a question about research tools. We're finding faculty asking for these things to support their research collaborations, particularly focused around various lab projects, mainly because of the ease with which it is to be able to distribute the administration and access and content creation to whomever it is that's already been validated to be part of the
group. The phone technology.
Now, what's happening here? I'm recording this session,
And there's somebody out there, Nick Noakes. I don't know where he is. Do you know where he is, Cyprian?
He's in Hong Kong.
He's in Hong Kong. So he was online with him. And he was trying to record, but he wasn't really getting sounds. And, and he can hear. So when I'm recording this, he called me up on Skype and sent me a nice note. Can I call first? And I'm not sure what it'll do to my recording, but I said, go ahead, try it. We'll see what happens. So he called me up. Now he's sitting there listening to this session live in Hong Kong with Skype and my recording and Audacity. It all works.
Are people familiar with Skype? How many people use it? Isn't it amazing?
Well, is anybody using the public version? I mean, Extend and some of the public standard versions of Skype? No? That's interesting. Skype is based on... Pardon me?
What's an example?
The Skype is a proprietary implementation of a SIP, the SIP protocol.
No.
Right? And yeah. So no, you might want to look at SIP standards because... there are public and open source and other versions of things like Skype, which give you access to the code so you can do development and integration into your PBX or what have you. I don't know if you've done, has anybody done the PBX integration of on their campuses? Not yet? So what is that? The value of that is that you can simply from your laptop type in the email address of anybody in your campus and it'll ring their phone and initiate a phone call to that person from your laptop. Wherever you happen to be, so it's a convenient thing. We're starting to think about it for remote office sessions.
Hi, I'm sorry, I'm not available at the moment. I'm sure I'll be back soon, but can you leave me a voicemail and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thank you very much.
So he's listening to the audio of his
voicemail.
This is Alan in Colorado, and we're getting pretty circular here with that. We're trying to call you, and you're listening in to Stephen's playback of this, but we're just trying to demonstrate Skype Live, so thanks for the message.
Okay. Do you have other wiki sites you'd like to bring to people's attention, or wiki uses?
Somebody did mention students creating content, and one of my favorite faculty members in our system is a physics teacher named David Weaver, and he's another one. I just mentioned wiki, and he said, I'll try it. So we just set up an experimental wiki, and he did some experiments where he wanted his students to sort of participate in creating a Wikipedia-like glossary of physics terms. So he just has a couple things in here, and these would actually have been written by students in his classes this last semester. So I don't know if it was string theory. So, you know, a little bit of a problem with terminology here, but small example, but again, having students participate in building a collaborative resource through a wiki.
Just to point out that people's typing isn't bad. It's a general convention within wikis to string together multiple words with the capital between them to create a link to a new space.
It's called a camel case. So if you put that in the text of your document, it automatically creates to a new page that doesn't exist.
Right. So that's one of the reasons it's so easy to do this, because all you have to do is use the right case in the top window, and so you've created your own space underneath it in the link so far.
So Alan Wynn says it's a service of the Maricopa Teaching and Learning Center. On the bottom there?
Yeah.
What's that mean? If I go to that URL, you're going to make me log in?
No, actually, this is one of those wide open ones that are just sitting out there.
Okay.
This is the first one I played with, and I kind of abandoned it, but David was still sort of tinkering with it. So, which brings me to the point of, I don't know if it's what you do in your institution, but one of the things I have the liberty to do is to set up some experimental servers for people in our system who want to experiment with some of these things. Because I know some of our colleges, they're not always as free to be able to do that. And I'd like to be able to see more of that in terms of what are called sandboxes for people to play with new technologies like this.
Is there a clearinghouse for assessment?
I'd have to dig a little bit to find some of those comparison tools. So I more or less spent some time looking at various wikis where the content was good and it looked like they were getting a lot of potential. I mean, then I dug under to see what kind of wiki they were using.
Um,
Have you seen me in
Einstein?
Oh.
Which leads me to, I guess, ask, would both you, Stefan and Alan, list the names of the wikis that you found most interesting and most useful at this point in time?
Well, probably for my next iteration, a lot of people make the source code available as open source. Is that called MediaWiki?
MediaWiki.
Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of sites using that as a format, and I would probably use that the next time out. I'm using a real old one called UseMod, which is one of the earlier ones that came out, and it's rather simple, but it was pretty simple to set up, so that was some of its advantage.
And you heard Confluence mentioned as another contemporary one that's probably a little bit more focused towards larger scale integration.
On my own website, I use a wiki called Erfurt Wiki. Which is kind of unusual. I'm not sure how many people use it. It's written in PHP, and the reason why I like it is because I've been able to go into it and customize it quite a bit. I had the same sort of spam problems that Alan did, so I went into Erfurt and connected it to my login system. I just wrote a few lines of PHP to pick up the login cookie, and also I've been able to customize the display quite a bit so that when you're on my website, it doesn't really show that you're in the wiki or in some other sort of page. It's all the same look and feel.
Yes. I wanted to ask you a question. We can use this wiki.
Uh-huh.
I really love it. Yeah. It's a very robust product. But on the question of subject to editor collaborative editing, there's a product called Moon Edit.
Yeah.
And if you Google Moon Edits, it'll also point you to the Wikipedia page on it, and there it talks about real-time collaboration tools, and there's a list of other products in that space that do it.
That's the one I was trying to think of before, is Moon Edit. That's the one Seb Paquette uses, but I can never access it.
We're Moon Editing right now. It's on Windows, I'm sorry. But if you Google Moon Edit, the second link will take you to Wikipedia, and then like in the description, real-time collaboration, like 12 other products.
Huh. It used to be the second link.
Yeah.
Let's go down the list.
Moon Edit one word as opposed
to... Moon Edit one word, yes. I think it's a wiki word.
Alright.
I thought I had it here.
Have we touched everything people wanted to on wikis?
Oh, there it is.
Well, you talked about doing external sources or external hosting. If you wanted to put something up, does it require a dedicated server? You can turn your PC into a server. What are the requirements to set up an internal web?
A lot of them are pretty simple. Most of them are either Perl or PHP, and they're just like, some of them are just one script. So I'm running a couple on a Linux box that's a PC, a retired desktop machine. So you don't need a massive server for it.
No. No dedicated IP address or anything else?
No, I've got one machine running five different wikis.
Yeah.
And they don't conflict with each other.
The thing you run into is storage, because we're using them for student projects in China. So the students are in China. They're using the wiki format to do blogging in a sense, because they're keeping a journal of their experiences. But they're also putting lots of photographs up, right? And storage requirements start to blossom rapidly when you've got six or seven or eight teams of four students each, and they're all putting up pictures and they're all putting up, you know, stuff. It's really useful because the faculty are following these students in their externships live, and it has been extremely valuable because they're also doing some teaching there and they're running into various technical issues, and they're getting direct support from the faculty in the field while they're doing it.
And probably the there are tools appearing that plug into course management systems to provide wiki-like features, and those will probably evolve as well if you're interested in keeping it under that hood.
Is there any, you're talking about the storage requirements, are there any monitoring tools so that you can at least know which chats and so forth and which individuals have a lot of storage so you can request it?
Well, it's not really a case of individuals having storage. What a wiki will typically do, and it varies a little bit, but a wiki will typically work with a database such as MySQL or something like that. And each page, as it's edited, a copy of the page will be stored in the database. So you can monitor the storage of the wiki by monitoring the storage in the database.
Right. You don't need additional tools, really, to do that. Although some of them have some scripts for you for particular implementation backends, which will give you a report of weekly usage or something of that, so weekly growth or something like that.
Did you communicate with some of those people who start those so that you can control space? That becomes an issue. I've never used wikis. I've just wondering, you know, in other cases, for example, email, or if you have file systems, you can say, oh, by the way, you're reaching quota. Or
yeah.
Sure, it could be done. I mean, it's just PHP, so.
Yeah, the real early wikis that, I mean, UseMod, you know, you can turn off, it has a file upload thing. I usually have that off.
Yeah.
So anytime you use, I mean, the early wikis, anytime you use an image, it actually needs to be on a remote URL.
Yeah.
Which is not very terribly convenient when you want to create an easy-to-use interface. So the real simple ones are, there are no media content. But I wouldn't be surprised with the range of ones that are evolving if you wanted to set some sort of cap, and like Stephen was saying, there's because a lot of these are open source, people are adding on tools that you can, if you know how to use the wiki software, you can plug them in there. I mean, with UseMod, when you go to their site, basically people on the front page of the site put their feature request or say, I'm having trouble doing with that, and other people respond right away and says, here's a patch, here's a hack to take care of that.
Other questions about wikis before we move on?
Just back to the mobile. So you said the integration with the media. What about SMS and the cellular world? Anything you want to
say? That's a good question. Do you know of anybody that's actually done feeds, SMS feeds to wikis online?
To wikis?
Yeah. That's the idea, right? Yeah. You're thinking of, you'd like to be able to post to your wiki from an SMS text editor.
Wow. How hard could that be? Well, no. I mean, as long as you can pick up the SMS signal, right, then from there it should be straightforward. I don't know if it's been done, but...
It's been done. I know a few people that do it. I mean, Chuck does it, for instance. He does it to his blog.
Well,
basically the same thing. I think he uses the Jabber API to pick up the SMS message.
Google with
Blogspot
supports that for free.
Right.
But those aren't wikis. I mean, it's the question of whether you can SMS specifically into a wiki. I mean, SMS to blog has been around for a while.
And believe it or not, we're doing a live video chat within this room. Thanks, Bob.
Unlimited audio conferencing?
Yeah.
Anybody, the question to the group, anybody using Gizmo at the moment on their PBXs to provide audio conference services? What's that? The product is called Gizmo. It's an open
lots
source project.
Lots of wiki items on G-I-Z-M-O. SMS.
It's gizmoproject.com.
So we should be tracking these URLs, right?
Some tracking easier. Look at this. Look at the
SMS work with it?
Oh, you're going to write them down? So you're going to scan that notepad onto the web later on there, Phil?
It'll be available in a week.
As soon as it's retyped by my colleagues in India.
Canada's typing this.
I'm taking notes and I'll post them on a wiki. Oh, experience.
Okay.
I kind of a meta question. Would it be good or bad for the community if people started to actually organize some of these issues so that your faculty could look and say, okay, I want to do a wiki where I can control some of the content, I want to have it to be a closed list, and actually started to standardize? I mean, I don't know if it would be about time or what have you. Or is it better to have all the stuff out there for everybody? Is it too early to really standardize? Because one thing I'm hearing here is there's so many choices that if I went in there and did a talk for faculty and said, use these three tools, 5 years, not 5 years, 5 months from now, there'd be better ones. So what's your sense on how volatile it is? Is it time to start to standardize? I don't mean in that sense.
Like an education. Can you respond to that?
Well, I mean...
Yeah, I'm sorry, came out.
Well, that's fair enough. And I mean, it's a natural reaction. I've seen quite a lot, right? You know, here's this great new tool. There's all kinds of things. Let's standardize it. And even better, let's lock it behind password access and keep it so that nobody else can use it but us. I mean, and my reaction is that a lot of this breaks the concept of what a wiki is. I'm sure a lot of you are thinking at this point, oh, the way to use a wiki, we'll set up a wiki, it'll be for our class, and we'll lock everyone else out so it'll all be secret and private. But then you have, like, collaboration among, like, 20 or 30 people. The strength of Wikipedia is collaboration among 15,000 people. And this is where you really begin to get the advantage of a wiki. It's in the openness and the collaboration. Standards, there are standards. Wikipedia, the Wikimedia software, that's a standard. It's as much of a standard as you want in this kind of field. And there's this idea that, oh, now we've got to get everybody using the same thing. But if everybody uses the same thing, then I can't go in and like connect it up to my website, log in, and design and all of that. It's standardized enough.
Well, I do think it's pretty volatile at the rate new widget tools are coming out.
And plugins and things like that.
Yeah. I had exactly the same problem trying to explain to some faculty what this is about, and it's just happening so quickly. But what the two faculty are working on it on a film course is that they would standardize on having their 30 students post to Wikipedia to be able to get the wiki experience, to have a little bit of pressure of knowing that somebody could come in the next day and wipe out what they said if it wasn't the right, and it gives them that experience. So I found it really very that the pace of change is a little too quick for our faculty to ingest all at once, but that this project that they're working on seems to really have captured their imagination and has answered a couple of folks' questions, at least, about what's this Wikipedia thing really all about, and there's nobody to peer review it.
But I just want to say very briefly, that pace of change, that's the norm from now on. It doesn't stop.
And again, with getting people used to this, you can talk about it, you can demo it, but until they get to do something that's meaningful to them like you described, that's when the wiki will start spinning their wheels as to what they can do with it.
We've got several questions. Julian in the back first, and then we'll loop around.
If a faculty member is providing feedback to the students, in the form, in the context of this wiki, don't we run the risk of violating FERPA?
What's FERPA?
What's FERPA? It's Canadian.
You violated it earlier in the session.
Right. FERPA for those of you that are less familiar, it has to do with privacy of student information.
Can I jump in? I'm wearing the hat of a former registrar. And FERPA is the Federal Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. This is a point that needs to be put in context with Stephen's observation about the open philosophy of the wiki, not only course, but beyond, of course, if you're really going to take advantage of it. If you make as a condition of registering for a course that the student must be prepared to share information, not only within the course, but even beyond the course, then that could create a possible conflict, and the student exercising her or his FERPA rights could challenge that. So it's a policy dimension of this technology that institutions do need to address, and perhaps get a reading from the Family Policy Compliance Office, which is the department in the U.S. Department of Education that rules on this.
And we ran into that situation, for example, let's say you have a campus calendar, individual calendars for faculty, staff, and students. So if somebody all of a sudden they want to exercise a FERPA right
and the system says, okay, when you go down and you look at a calendar, you can look at everybody's, at least their name. You may not be able to see their information, but you can see their name on a list. Then you've violated FERPA. So what we've decided to do at the University of San Diego is that if you want to use this collaborative environment in terms of calendars, you, if you exercise FERPA, you don't have access to that feature. Now, that may run in violation of some other things. It's not specifically tied to a course. But I could imagine, I guess, if you're limiting their access to a course because they want to exercise their rights under FERPA, you have the conflict.
If you remove the personally identifiable information, which is the solution that many of you post-grade have done, that might be a way around. But at some point, at least within a course, students are going to be working together collaboratively and to be able to share.
What happens?
But they have to, I mean, if they opt in, then they've waived that right, correct?
Right.
So that's.
But if you create the catch 22, that in order to take this course,
they have to opt in.
Fire.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Come over here.
I was just going to say. I mean, I know that part of FERPA is that they could be included in the directory unless they explicitly opt out of that activity. And then, I mean, I think you may have a few that you have to work with, but they probably will work around to the values.
Okay. So this is an underlying issue here, associated with. The notion of these open collaborative tools and the imposition of various federal and or policy guidelines in the process. I mean, I thought you were going to someplace else, Julian, in that since you can openly edit and change anything in a wiki at any time, the question of provenance of whose work is it is a real issue, real interesting one. Now, most wikis you can roll back. The idea behind most wikis is that any time an edit is changed, the edit history is available for you to go back and go to the previous instance of that page. So you can trace back to where changes happen and deal with that. But it does raise questions if you are concerned about associating contribution to ownership, how you track that. And most of the mechanisms for doing so are social convention, not technology solutions.
Pseudonym,
right? Mm-hmm. You had a question?
I was just going to say that it seems like the question of standardization two things got wrapped up in the same breath.
Yeah.
One is standardization and the momentum of the technology. The pace of change is not going to change. It's going to continue.
Right.
But the size of the community, it doesn't necessarily, the greater the size of the community isn't always greater value. Sometimes the size of the community being small can be valuable as well. So a class being a community, there can be value in that shared space with that size, just as there can be value in the size of Wikipedia.
Yeah, but my reaction here is that the default in university seems to be the small size, the class.
Right.
And a lot of the software is set up, in fact, so that the default becomes the only option. And it becomes a logistical, I was going to say logistical nightmare, but that's too much hyperbole, but it becomes logistically difficult to create a wider collaboration. The way we set up here, we've got people in Hong Kong and people in, we just sat down and we just sort of did it off the cuff. And if you're in an environment that's locked down and closed down where this sort of thing, your own software makes it impossible for you to communicate with Hong Kong, then you've cut off a big part of what this technology can do. Right. And the collaboration isn't all about small groups.
Right. I mean, I imagine that little video chat was the colleague who is the person most knowledgeable about protein binding in the particular course that you're teaching right now, and you'd like him to talk to your students for 20 minutes. Mm. And you'd like to do it pretty much ad hoc because you talked to him the night before and said, are you available? They said, yes, now you're in the class. Can you do it? What's the impediment in front of you for you to be able to do that? We can't do it at MIT with phones. I mean, getting a phone in the classroom is a multi-day process, right? Imagine. So we have some real issues.
What's the security possibilities for hackers here who can perhaps use this as an entry port into a system?
There was a PHP vulnerability, but I think that's been patched. Other than that...
Yeah, I think the vulnerabilities are with the underlying infrastructure, yeah. Not with wikis per se.
Yeah.
So if you've got a Linux machines running it, then you might want to be attentive to what the latest rev of the Linux patches
are. Vulnerability, but in terms of the spam issue, because UseMod is very popular. There's someone who's written a bot that's able to monitor sites, and Brian Lamb at University of British Columbia, who wrote a great EDUCAUSE article in Wikis a few years ago, he's monitored by that bot, and basically, because that is a wide-open wiki that's widely used, and basically that bot is watching it every hour, and it's able to spot content and automatically, because what's happening, people are writing these programs that automatically insert 1,000 links to websites you never want to go to.
Right.
And this is able to walk through and actually strip them out automatically because he's a target. And in some ways, he's probably set himself up to be a target, Cyprian, right?
Rob, and then...
I just want to add my two cents to a couple of things that people have said. Stephen mentioned the importance of blogs, of wikis being open. The class that was joint between Cal State Bay Monterey and Southern Illinois University wouldn't have been possible if it wasn't open. That's the kind of benefit you get when you make something open. And then about the, should you wait until this all settles out, open source is such a wonderful bubbling ferment of ideas and new things that it just goes faster and faster. And it's never going to settle out. The best you can do is find what you like now, and then it will improve or there'll be better versions later.
And one way to get a handle on this is to find ways you can maybe use it in your workflow, the work that we do, not necessarily just for classes. And one of the examples I like is, it's, for most part, scheduling meetings is done by about 50 emails back and forth, right? And has anybody had that experience besides me? Because I can't use our calendar system. But there's this site called Common Craft that writes these great things like wikis in plain English. And he's got this great post about planning a camping trip in a wiki. And it's a great example of something small, but that makes sense to do in that wiki environment, because you're trying to organize a trip, and, okay, someone posts, well, I think we should leave it at 3 o'clock, and someone says, no, wait, we got to do it at 4:30, and then they put up a recipe list, and who's going to bring all the stuff, and all this activity is taking place in the wiki, whereas you're one of the participants, when you need to see what's going on with the latest plans, you go there and check it out. You're not getting bombarded by this flood of unattached email.
Clearly, the openness and the broad audiences are critical for the success of this. I understand that completely. But for those of you who have these projects, have you worked at all or had any concerns expressed by your librarians about how it changes the definition of information literacy?
On a regular basis, yeah.
Interesting.
It does change the definition of information literacy.
See, they've been very precise about the definition of information literacy, and they teach to that in a very tightly prescribed curriculum in many ways. But this really changes the roadmap in many ways. This is one of the great examples of, like Wikipedia, of unknown sources contributing valuable information.
Right.
It's counter to their definition.
And I can't find it. There's a parody of Wikipedia where everything on it is a lie.
Yeah.
It's created by a librarian.
It's fantastic, because it's almost as active as Wikipedia is.
Oh. Yeah. Actually, I did address...
I was going to mention, that's the next big topic of ELI, information literacy, so I'm sure this kind of question is...
Yeah, I did address the question of information literacy and websites in a paper just recently, how to evaluate websites. That probably would speak directly to your question.
All right.
I'm a linguist, so the language we speak changes minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, and we are constantly norming around the new words, the new nuances, the new connotations that exist. Language is, in a sense, like maybe the best representation of what you were talking about yesterday. The knowledge is everywhere. Who starts words? We don't even know where the words come from. But so the natural state for humans is to be constantly norming to the new technology of language. That's our natural state. So information literacy is just coming closer to what we live in anyway. So it's not like departing from the norm, it's going towards the norm.
Okay. We're going to, in the interest of time, we're going to kind of switch unless there's a burning, well, one last question in this context, but what I was going to suggest is that we switch our focus for a minute to move from wikis to another tool that is becoming quite popular in a lot of sites, which is this notion of public bookmarking, or social bookmarking, or whatever you want to call it, and the various tools, tagging tools, et cetera, that are available and being used in various interesting ways. Serpin, you want to make a comment, and then Andrew?
This is a comment from Hong Kong, but Nick is wondering about the comfort level of the NetGen with the openness that some of us may be less comfortable.
The difference between the NetGen's general sense of comfortness and openness versus ours. Or... Okay.
wait until they start applying for important jobs and people start Googling them. We'll see if the attitude actually changes.
It's important to have a pseudonym.
You think they expect that?
Well, they mean they Google prospective girlfriends. They Google their prospective employer. I'm sure that they expect when they apply for a job that somebody's going to Google. I mean, that's the way it works.
But they don't give out their phone number, their cell phone number to everybody.
No, if you don't want it, public information, you don't put it on the web, period.
Andrew?
This is kind of a comment that maybe falls nicely between these and the gap here. In the net generation discussion we had, I think Monday, someone commented that technology is defined as anything invented after you're born. we asked the question early on, what is collaboration and collaboration tools? And I think it's important to be mindful that, you know, certainly in my conversation with people about collaboration technology, people's definition of what a collaboration tool is often colored by what they know of tools that exist. And when we ask the question, what's the future? I think it's important to think about what is the nature of collaboration that students engage in. And to a certain extent, there's a physicality to that that's not represented by some of these tools. And I think, you know, Rob did a nice job of showing, you know, we did a video conference within the room. Well, does that really make a lot of sense to do if we're sitting in the same room with one another? I think there's also, we have to ask questions about some of these tools in terms of how appropriate they are for students, especially, for instance, when they meet together in a physical setting.
So we're going to transition then to social bookmarking tools and tagging and such. I'm assuming this is more or less well known around in the audience. Yes? They're shaking heads. No. No. Okay. Okay. So is it? Let me rephrase the question. For how many of you? That's a public way to do it. It's a wrong answer. We'll just talk about it. So, Furl, Delicious. And you've got the list there. Why don't you make a sort of an introduction of what it is, and Stephen, you can comment on from your you've used a lot of Foster space to comment on tagging in particular.
Well, first of all, the BookLart technology in web browsers hasn't changed much since Mosaic. In terms of you visit a site, you bookmark it, and once you visit 100 sites, you can't really manage it anymore, no matter how many little file hierarchies you put on it. And you got a different computer, and you've lost your bookmarks, you don't have access to it. So one aspect of this is that these are stored elsewhere, so you can access it anywhere. The social aspect of it is that you put it in a space where everybody else is posting sites that they bookmark, and you're able to extract some interesting information. You're able to see what's popular. And then you put it on this layer of people applying their own descriptors of it, and you get different ways to navigate and aggregate information. I've been sort of keeping track of some of these, and I have about 14 or 15, and every time I think, no one's going to sit down and invent another social bookmark tool, three or four more pop out, and I'm sure I'm missing another 15 or 20 out there, et cetera. But some of the more popular ones are Furl and Delicious, and Kanatea is sort of interesting. It's sort of out of Nature Publishers, is that right? And it's sort of really meant to sort of also bookmark scholarly articles and be able to put commentary on top of that.
The template, what the differences between these are is the template that you're given when you go to do your bookmark.
Yeah.
Right? So when you bookmark a spot, a typical bookmarking
you get the URL, you get a comment field, and then with these tools you may get the ability to tag.
Yeah.
Right? But Connotia gives you things that look more like a scholarly bib record that you can fill in or that is grabbed from the site.
Yeah, and Delicious is probably the most, like, not very pretty looking, but it's probably the most interesting and toughest one to type out when you're trying to explain to somebody what it's all about. So basically, I use it to catalog sites that I scan by and say, that looks interesting, and I might come back to someday. So really, at some level, it's my own personal collection of websites that have some sort of meaning to me. And when I basically I visit a site, I pull up a little browser toolbar, I get to, it automatically knows the address, the name, and I apply my own descriptive tags to it. And
it's getting there.
It's getting there. So more or less, on the right, these are all tags that I've used, and sometimes I'm not very consistent in my own tagging. Delicious does have some tools where you can collapse them. This is what's known as the tag cloud sort of view, so the bigger the size of the text means I have more things in there. You can also view it in a list format, which basically lists the number of things in there. So blog-like, it's got the newest things I've put on this site most recently. And then if I want to drill down to some of my categories, let's say I went into education, these would be things that for some reason I thought were related to the concept of education within the realm of just things that I've looked at. So that's one level, sort of the personal level of managing information. It has RSS feeds, so you can have this like pushed out to your web pages. People subscribe to these things, so if people really want to follow the stuff that Stephen Downs is looking at, they can subscribe to his feeds of sites and just on a regular basis say, these are things he's looking at, although his blog does the same thing.
For those of you in the library world, if you're familiar with Social Science Citation Index or what have you, this is sort of a personal version of that. I mean, because you're actually going to get a feed of what people are that you are interested in,
right,
are themselves finding interesting.
So if it's a little bit hard to see, but like this case place, it shows that 23 other people have also bookmarked the same site. So one thing you can do is, so if you want to get a sense of who else thinks this site is interesting, and then you can drill down into their collection. So if you sort of build up a network of people who regularly bookmark sites that are of interest to you. And also, it gives you a sense of whether something is sort of broader interest out there in the community of people who are working at it. The other way you can do it is you can expand this, and you can go out and see everybody on Delicious who have tagged things with this word of education. And this will be an obviously broad list, but it sort of gives you this different sort of way of navigating of information by going through these panels of the way people are describing it and how many people are describing these various resources. And then there's the aspect of they write things, so you can see overall what are the most popular things that are being monitored, and this is basically almost a real time. So Wares is out there at the number one spot, but you know, and there are there's some rather interesting sort of applications that people are writing. Delicious has an open API, so people can write external applications that tap into that data and do some rather interesting things to write these sort of flash-based graphic displays that show you what's been popular over a long range of time. I can show a couple examples of those. Chris?
Are there... one of the reasons I haven't done much with any of these particular tools is the convenience factor. On one hand, it's convenient because it's independent of one machine. But on the other hand, you have an awful lot of bookmarks on your bookmark toolbar as well because it's convenient. It's easier to get to.
Yeah.
Is there any work being done to integrate any of these tools with a client application like Firefox? Because, I mean, you can see the integration there.
I think there are some plugins that allow you to directly push stuff in there.
There's got to be a Firefox Delicious extension.
Foxy Licious.
There you go.
The great thing about Delicious are the names that people create.
Well, I wanted to know the difference between Delirious and Delicious.
Foxy Licious.
You had it on your list.
Yeah, I'm struggling to remember. I think that was...
I think Delirious is a Delicious lookalike. open source?
Yeah, it is. It's actually created by somebody from Moncton.
A neighbor,
Steve Mallett. Actually, he lives in Riverview. It's just across the river.
Delirious.
Is there anything that ties into net snippets that would bring these two things together?
And what is, I'm not familiar with net snippets.
Net snippets is a plugin you can, I use it for Firebox, but it's a free thing that allows you to add, you can select a URL or and it'll add either the document that's at the other end of the piece, or PDF, or just the web page. You can annotate that, and it keeps that for you. And the nice thing in an academic environment is that it captures the citation format for referring back to that page. So if you want to have them collect web resources, they can do that in a nice way, but it also, they don't lose that information that they need to incorporate that in some sort of reference.
And there's also a site you like, I think, which does some sort of bibliographic.
Didn't you want to comment on the tagging stuff?
I'll confess, now I've tried many of these tools. I don't currently use any of them. And part of the reason why I don't use any of them is I use my own system on my website. But the other part of the reason that I don't really use them is because I'm not really a fan of tagging as a means of organizing content. And the reason why I'm not a fan of tagging is because, well, it's a bit like I discussed yesterday with the standardization and chaos kind of thing. But basically, if a tag is going to be useful, it has to be very specific. But if it's going to be very specific, then you can never find it. You know, I mean, if you think about the number of useful tags that you would need, it could be in the tens of thousands. Moreover, the tagging of a resource takes place at the time that you look at the resource. Now, I'll bet you, Alan, you've probably never gone back and re-tagged things.
Yeah, I've kind of collapsed some tags when I have blog and blogs, but I've never really...
Yeah. But what happens is, like, things change constantly. We're back to this constant change thing. And so you read a resource, the environment shifts, and then later on, a concept within that resource becomes important to you. Now you don't have access to that resource because you would now create the tag. Podcasting is a great example. Podcasting is the enclosure of a reference to an audio feed or an audio file within an RSS feed. It's like broadcasting on the internet for iPods. Now, when this started up in August of, 2003, it just sort of arrived overnight. Now, there had been work in audio and audio on RSS prior to podcasting, but in August it got that name, podcasting. And that's when we would have started tagging something, podcasting. But now podcasting, there's none of the things before podcasting actually are found underneath that category. My approach, what I do, is I just simply write a description, whatever it is. I have my own systems. Looks a bit like those, but I just type in a description. And then for me, categorization is not a matter of tagging or anything like that. Rather, I consider each category, properly so-called, to be a predefined search, defined as a predefined search, and then I just use regular expressions to do my search. So my categories are the things that are always changing, rather than the list of resources. I don't know if that made a whole lot of sense. It did get some hands.
Have used Spotlight. I mean, that's one of the real huge benefits. Spotlight is the newest search tool on top of EOS, on top Tiger. It really, really does provide tremendous access to the materials that you have in it.
There's also a capability that I've used before within, it's proprietary because it's within Oracle, but Oracle Text, and actually if you
let's say you create your own portal or your own collection of links, then you can actually schedule it, and it'll go out and crawl all those links again and re-index not only all those links,
sure.
but anything that is connected at however many levels you want. So, and then through the Oracle Text Engine, you can do stemming, fuzzy matching, sound decks as a thesaurus built in. So then it sort of enables you to go ahead and do your mini Google, I guess, to have your own private information, or it can be for an institution or an organization.
And I think when those tools hit the mainstream, a lot of these tools will be obsoleted.
Contextual question for Stephen. In the EDUCAUSE space, we have a resource center that has 6,000 to 7,000 documents, which range from articles in the magazines to presentations at conferences. Each of them is tagged with a taxonomy term from over 500 terms. That taxonomy has three levels of hierarchy. Judgments are being made regularly about how to change that, and I think the membership wants leaders, experts in this field, in particular categories, to make judgments about that. How can we manage that, in a sense, standards-based philosophy with the potential of tagging on the fly as people are using these, and still have a meaningful structure that people can come to and find what they want?
Meaningful structure.
Well, meaningful defined by the last comment.
Yeah, because in the community you will have people of varying degrees of expertise and familiarity with things. They may only know the highest level taxonomy terms, security. They want to drill down into things that are practical. They don't want the idiosyncrasies of the range of users who might have different terms that are evolving, but at the same time they don't want to miss that, the richness of that evolution.
There's a way to do that. Once, and that's the problem with abstracts. I did some work with JSTOR before. And if you look at just abstracts, you're dependent upon one person or a group of individuals, authors on the paper, right, to do that abstract. So if you only do your searching on abstracts, you're going to miss a lot of information. One way, and same thing with that, if you do a taxonomy, you're relying on this group of experts, whatever that expert is, and the classification to classify the document, and like you say, as it changes. So one way would be to have a dynamic thesaurus that would have this taxonomy so it could change. So as those links, those documents are re-indexed over time, as that thesaurus expands, then you've got the capacity to maybe add those terms, and it automatically goes and re-indexes them. And like all these terms that come up in the last few years. At least that's one idea that I've.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of hesitated when you raised the question, but I think you've got the right idea there. There's this idea, like the EDUCAUSE resource base, is this pile of resources, and we're going to attach metadata to it, and then it's done for all time. And that's exactly not the way to look at it. The way to look at it is these things are resources in a churn. Sometimes they're relevant. A couple of months later, they're less relevant. Sometimes a taxonomy term will apply to them. A year later, it won't apply anymore. And as these resources are used or not used, they acquire metadata in context. And then the access to these resources as well. I mean, we're thinking about go to the big pile of books and find exactly the right one. I don't think that that's the approach either. I think that the location of relevant materials is going to be, rather than a one-time search type process, it'll be a time-based thing based on connections between yourself, people that you know, events that happened in space, where the way it should work, the way I sometimes describe it as the self-organizing web, is at the point in time when you need a particular piece of work, you won't go search for it. Your software, knowing your social connections, your interests, and so on, will have presented that particular piece of work there for you. That's the way it should work. And if the meta tagging and if the connections among individuals work the way they should, the way I think they will, and it does have to be open and it does have to be a well-connected network, then that will happen. So the way I picture this in the future, you're typing an essay in Word 2010, right? And you have a sidebar, and your sidebar, as you're typing whatever it is you're typing, your sidebar is always active. It's searching your network, and it's recommending resources that you might want to look at that have been recommended by people you know.
Wilson, and then the
guy. Just a comment on that, and I don't live in this world, so I'm probably judging it incorrectly, but it seems to me that you're saying that resources will find you based on your history and your social context.
Right.
And it seems to me the flip side of that is that resources which somehow fall outside of your social context, you will never be aware of, even though they might be extremely important to you. And so you are, even though this world is changing extraordinarily fast, you are rigidly bound by your history, and you will never know what's going on in the rest of the world.
But you see, the logic of network speaks against that. If something happens way out there in the rest of the world, it's only going to take a small number of steps for it to get to me. So it will show up.
It doesn't mean that you won't be able to go out and search for something completely outside your
country. You could do that, too.
But you're arguing the community never gets partitioned. It seems to me it's possible to have people who are within a certain world separate from the rest of the world.
It's possible, and you know, the institutions that do that more than anyone are universities, it seems to me.
I'm fascinated by looking at these tools and seeing how little they exploit the visual cues and spatial cues.
But you go back to box
computer technology allows.
Back to box.
If I have one more list, I'm going to be complete.
Right.
And I've not shown you. I mean, these are just some simple ones. This is one I was talking about, just tapping into what's being tagged in delicious as most popular over a span of time. And help me out with the familiarity of this. Each one of these chips is representing by color how popular it is. So green is more popular than red. Is that right, Phil?
Yeah.
And so you can sort of see over time what is more popular, as well as there's a left to right structure in terms of when it was most recently added. And if I see one and see, wow, that really highlights, if I click on that, that's sort of collapsing that information so I can track that one universal packing list. I have no idea what that is. And it's giving me a little histogram on the bottom. And then as I'm going around and I'm sort of tracking other things, this is a Delicious's tool for putting their content on your sidebar. That's always very popular. And then something that's rather small, web development in Melbourne, Australia, sorry. So there are some interesting graphical tools. There's one that is, you can put your Delicious account on there. Instead of creating sort of a text list of your bookmarks, it'll create a graphical map where they're represented as nodes. So your most prominent bookmarks are a giant, you know, blogging one with these smaller little peripheral ones. So it's sort of a graphical display of your own domain.
It's the Grokker kind of circular graph interface. I don't know if you've seen those. Mm-hmm.
But it's not a conceptualization of where you are situated in relation to your network, your social network.
No. But there are some interesting ones that Flickr does, if you're familiar with Flickr.
Okay, we have 3 minutes.
Yeah, we can get to Flickr in 3 minutes.
So we'll, I guess an opportunity for some parting comments or observations, and I give the audience the first chance to make any parting comments or observations you'd like before we go off.
And I need a group photo, so please smile.
And all right, this will be up on the site shortly, probably violating all kinds of privacy.
Can everybody say, I give you permission?
For what?
Any other comments? Spots in front of my eyes for the rest of the day.
Sure.
I think it would be great if we could have, I'll avoid the word even best practices, tools that, say, high school teachers thought were really cool for physics, and to take some of the vast amount of information and help organize it so that we could say to those folks, high school teachers or professors of English who want to do stuff in terms of video and literacy, and we could point them to it and then develop it.
There's someone who took, there's an open source bookmarking tool called Scuttle, and someone, I forget where this guy's at, he made a version of it because it's open source where when you create an account on there, you sort of create a profile and you say, I'm a high school teacher and I teach physics. So everything he tags in that is going to be associated. So if you want to see everything that high school physics teachers tag as important sites, so that's a little bit of a marriage of that.
Diana? Can I just give a plug? One of the things that we're trying to do in the EduCloud Learning Initiative is every month write up a very short piece that explains to the layperson what some of these technologies are. You can look at a piece on wikis, social bookmarking, and the like, and one of those comes out every month. If you go to our website, you can find those there. You all may know about it, but many of the people on your faculty and administrators don't, and we're trying to use these as a quick way to demystify a lot of things.
Their advertising is coming up.
Next year, can we plan ahead and pick a couple of sessions that we'll do as a group, editing the notes or...
Ooh, yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Let's try actually using it as a group.
And when it works at conferences, I've seen it where 8 or 10 people are group writing.
Yeah.
And Sip and I are talking about how do people assume different roles, because some people are like monks. They want to get down every word, every detail of the note. Some people, and I don't want to do that because I can't type, but I want to put like big commentary. And that's an interesting dynamic to watch play out.
I'd like to thank Stephen and Alan for guiding us through some of this. I appreciate your spending the last part of the SAC conference with us. Thank you.